Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Table Manners. I'm Jessie Ware and I am at Lenny's. And she's got her Lenny apron on.
Just in case I forget who I am. Or you do.
How are you, Mum?
I'm okay. I had a very nice day yesterday. Had one of the first goodbye meals to Dr. Alex because he's going away. So went to our favourite again, Honey & Co, for lunch.
Delicious. Now, we also went out for a dinner date with a past guest. Mr. Phil Rosenthal invited us out with Monica and Lily, his wife and daughter, to take us to Thomas's new restaurant, who is Brat. There's a new restaurant.
Called Mountain.
It is so good. And we got completely spoilt.
We had everything, I think, on the menu.
It was absolutely amazing. Anybody who's in Soho, go to Mountain. It's brilliant. They make their own bread. They've got a massive old Gosney pizza oven in the bottom. Yeah. And it's just a really great vibe.
Tell you what I loved.
What?
That red vermouth.
The red vermouth from Sicily.
Oh, my God. It was so delicious.
Maybe we should start serving our guests vermouth.
I think we should.
There's a vermouth bar in Nunhead, actually, very near me. That's very cool. Maybe we should go for a little aperitif before we pick the kids up from school, Mum.
Anyway, it was great fun. Monica is my spirit animal, I think, literally.
Monica Rosenthal.
Yeah. We finished our vermouth at the same time, looked at each other and said, wine? She said, yeah, wine.
I also love the fact that, forget Lenny's in the restaurant, people on Soho were stopping
outside
Phil,
the window,
waving like he was a beetle.
Yeah. He's such a sweet man.
The nicest man. And it was just really sweet that, you know, look, we've made some friends on this podcast, but he actually got in touch and was like, can we take you out for dinner?
And I do need to discuss the second series of The Bear with him because I was only halfway through and now I'm right the way through. And I think it's the best thing that I've seen on TV
so brilliant.
For 100 years.
Also, past guest Rami Youssef did the Copenhagen episode.
Yeah.
Love you, Rami. Anyway, today we have a wonderful chef.
Well, you've tasted her food. I haven't
it's
yet.
It's the best. It's one of my favourite restaurants. I went to it when I did Jay Rayner's podcast, Out for Lunch. And he introduced me to her restaurant, which is the Marylebone. It's called Jaconi. Really cozy. It's a real neighbourhood spot. I mean, I don't know anybody that lives in Marylebone. I wish I did. I wish I'd lived there.
I think I'd like to live there.
So Ravinda is from, she was born in Kenya to Indian parents. And Jaconi is a fantastic restaurant that she runs with her husband. She's made cookbooks in lockdown. She did this Comfort and Joy, I think it was vegan, these deliveries. And I've never had meals like it. It was so exciting. She's here to talk about her third book, Comfort and Joy, Irresistible Pleasures from a Vegetarian Kitchen. Oh, it's vegetarian, Mum.
I know. Does she only cook veggie food?
No, not at all. She's a regular on Saturday Kitchen, Sunday Brunch. She is an amazing chef and she's actually more glamorous than you, Mum. Potentially, she always comes in some fabulously colourful dress and a lip.
I'll keep my yellow pinny on then.
Yeah, maybe keep the yellow pinny on. So what are we cooking? Well, actually, we've kind of asked
her. She's bringing some starters, some dip, some bread.
We'll let her introduce that.
And then I've made, at your request, scallops with pea puree with cumin.
I think it's cumin. It really makes me upset when you say cumin.
How would you say it?
Cumin.
Okay. Now we know, Alice. So I've made a pea and cumin puree.
Thank you.
Hope it's all right.
You did this for Cat Deely, and I remember it was so delish.
I think I've done it for someone else as well, scallops.
Carol
Vorderman. Oh,
yeah.
Sure,
I didn't do the pea puree, though.
Yeah, did
I? No, I don't think I did.
I think you did.
Okay.
Sorry, this is my fault because I really enjoy it. And then she's making a strawberry falooda cake.
Which Tully thought was
sweet.
Tully thought
it was a strawberry flood cake, which I also thought sounded quite fab. We've just looked in the cookbook.
Flooded with strawberries.
The falooda cake, it's got condensed milk, cream, strawberries.
This sounds basil like seeds. An Asian delight.
Oh, it sounds heaven.
Ravinder Bogle, cooming up on Table Manners.
Ravinder, how nice to have you over.
It's so nice to be here.
And look, we've nearly all got the same coloured nail varnish. I did for not even worn high. I prepared Mum that you would come in looking glamorous.
Oh, you are. I had to make an effort. I mean, look at you both. You
oh
look
my
amazing.
God, please, you're kidding
Excuse
me.
Excuse me.
But the dress is very good.
Thank you. It is Alamy, and I am obsessed. They're an Australian designer, and all my dresses seem to come from them. I just love them.
Was it an Instagram like sponsored post, or did you do a book tour in Australia, or how did you find out?
No, it wasn't. I found them in Selfridges. There was a dress, and they do collaborations with artists, and there's this incredible dress. In fact, it's in the book, and it's pink with like an evil eye on the cuff and horses.
Ooh.
And I was just like, it's all over the book, you'll see.
Do you always wear dresses?
I'm a dress girl, definitely.
Ever wear trousers?
Sometimes, occasionally, but you know what? I just like a dress because it's like you don't have to style too much. It's just done. You're done in one step.
You look gorgeous.
Thank you.
So, I mean, we always love it when we have a chef on because they cook. And you have come in with a lot of Tupperware. Can you just tell us what you have brought to the table today?
Well, I cooked from the book, so we're going to
Comfort
and joy. So there's shirmal, which is this beautiful saffron, like almost like brioche loaf that comes from Armenia.
Mm.
And it's really, honestly, the house smelled so lovely this morning, just smelt of saffron. I've made a strawberry falooda cake for pudding. And then I've got some peaches with whipped tofu and Thai basil gremolata that everyone at the restaurant's going mad about.
Did you do something similar on Sunday brunch?
I did.
Was that the...
That's the one.
Oh my God, I was going to talk about that. That was so... Mum, it's so good.
And no one can believe it's vegan because the whipped tofu seems like cheese almost. It's really rich and delicious. And then I bought some pickles because we just got these beautiful vegetables from the farm that we work with. It's a wonderful biodynamic farm. So we pickled yesterday. So I thought I'd bring you some of those. And I've made a dip to go with the bread, which is the burnt courgette and cardamom dip.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
And Mum's going to add some scallops in there, and we're not going to need to eat dinner.
Amazing.
Let's talk about Jacconi, because that's how I first met you, when I did Jay Rayner's podcast.
Yes.
And he took me to one of his favourite restaurants in London.
Oh.
And you came out, and you were glamorous and gorgeous, and I had the best scotch egg of my life. Is it still on the menu?
It is. It's never coming off. I mean, that is a signature, and people come... For that and the banana cake, people go nuts
It's such a cozy, wonderful restaurant, and it's exciting food. That's what you make. You make really exciting food, but there's like this homely atmosphere that's around it. And I don't necessarily think people expect that to be in central London. Do you know what I mean? It feels like a living room, but it's exquisite food.
It's the team. My team, I think I've got the best team in London. They're just wonderful. We're 23 people now, and out of them, maybe about 12 or 13 of us have worked together for 5 years plus.
Wow.
And so it really is like a little family. And they're such ambassadors for all our kind of values at Jacconi. And hospitality is at the heart of it. It's like, how do you make someone feel? What do you give of yourself that doesn't appear on the check at the end of it that makes people feel amazing? And that's what they do, and I love them.
But how did you start out as a cook? Did you go to university?
Yes, I did.
What did you study?
I had a really unorthodox route into chefing. So I was born in Nairobi in Kenya to a very traditional Punjabi family. And
when had they moved there?
My grandfather moved in the 1940s to Kenya. He was an amazing man. We lived in this big extended family, and my mother had this very Victorian idea that her girls must learn to join some sort of domestic cult, cook, sew, all the rest of it. And I remember being
How
five.
How many girls were there?
Four, and I'm the youngest girl. Okay. So my elder sister is 16 years older than me. So they all got married very young, like 19, 20, they were done. They were like, you know, married. And then I was the younger one, and then we moved to this country, and, you know, obviously education and a different environment in life. And I was the first girl to be allowed to go to university. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. So although my father was a very educated man, he was quite a chauvinist when it came to girls. He likened educating his daughters to planting a seed in your neighbor's garden. Like, you'll never get the return. And so I was this rebel, and I was just like, I'd seen marriages happen, you know, early, and what that does and the kind of potential that gets snuffed out. And I went and I studied, and my dad finally, you know, agreed. And then he said, you're either going to do law, accountancy or pharmacy, none of which interested me. But then I'd watched a bit of Ally McBeal. So I was like, OK, that might be good.
Law.
So I studied.
You ended up with Harrison Ford.
Yeah. I studied a year of law and was basically a nuisance because I wasn't interested. And then secretly changed my course to English and didn't tell anyone until I graduated. I know. And
where were you at university?
At North London University, North London. Which is metropolitan now. But, you know, I had no sort of mentors or someone who'd gone before. I went there because I fancied a boy who was going there. I literally followed him there. And that didn't last. I came out, my dad was like, why did you do an English degree? You speak very good English already. He just didn't get it. And then I started working in journalism and went into fashion and beauty journalism. And then the whole food thing happened.
But so everyone says that running a restaurant is possibly one of the most stressful jobs in the world.
The first 2 years were hell. Like, I still have PTSD for the first 2 years because I was there all hours. You're opening, you're closing. I didn't have a holiday for the first 6 months, like not even a day off. It was just intense.
What's your dad think of that?
My dad passed away before the restaurant
happened. No.
I know, it's so sad. But you know what? There is something lovely. I cry when I talk about this, and actually everyone cries when I talk about this. But my dad, after not believing in me for so many years and being like, you know, girls, they just should get married. And that's what his plan was for me. And we had all these arguments about, you know, he'd want to introduce me to this boy and that boy. And I slammed doors and like, we just didn't speak the same language. And then when he got cancer, it was like he suddenly reevaluated life. And I got the biggest blessing of my life, which was to have 2 years to become very close to him and really sort all our issues out. And I remember when he was dying and he was in the hospital, and he'd say to me things like, you know, you're not my daughter, you have been like a son to me. And that for him was like a massive compliment. And I took it as that. At that point, I just started doing food television and started cooking. And for a man who was an immigrant, bricks and mortar, he was a businessman, bricks and mortar made sense to him. And I remember him saying to me, you need to open a restaurant. I'll give you, he had this site in Erith in Kent, and he was like, I'll give that to you. And it was this like pokey little cafe. And I was like, no, I don't want to open a restaurant. It's not what I'm interested in. And then I had the opportunity to do a pop-up, and he would call me, because at that time his brain was poisoned, so he was very confused all the time. And he'd call me sometimes 4 or 5 times a day being like, how was that pop-up that you were doing? How did it go? Did you enjoy it? And the night that I did the pop-up was the night, I remember finishing it like 2 in the morning, cleaning the kitchen down. And I was like, I can't wait to tell my dad tomorrow, like how it went. And that morning at 4 in the morning, I got a call from my mom saying, you better come to the hospital. And he was in for 8 weeks, and I never got to show him what I've done. And I do think that he's pushed me on from beyond the grave. And, you know, I think Jikoni was his dream for me, really.
What does Jikoni mean?
It means kitchen in Swahili.
Oh, I didn't even know. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah.
He knows it's all happening.
I
and
know.
How well you're
and
doing.
You know what? I always say to my husband, Nadim, I'm like, God, you know, maybe it's good he's dead, because he'd be drinking me out of my whiskey. He'd be at the restaurant with his friends, with his cronies. Just, he would have loved it. And he must be experiencing it on some level, I'm sure.
I'm sorry, though. That's heartbreaking.
It is. But you know what? It's been incredible. And I think both my father and my grandfather really are the soul and spirit of Jikoni, especially my grandfather. And I've written a lot. Actually, the book is very much a love letter to him. And it's this story of this man who, like, left India, you know, in the 1940s, this voyage into the dark, you know, a rebel who, I get that from him, who ran away from home looking for better opportunities, got on a ship sailing to Kenya, sailed 26 days, a migrant boat, terrible conditions, ended up back in Bombay because something had gone horribly wrong. And, you know, I can't imagine what they would have experienced. And yet a month later, he made that voyage again and then ended up in Kenya. And even though then, you know, it was a British colony, there were racial divides, language barriers. He didn't know anyone. He had no money. He fell in love with the soil because the soil was so rich and benevolent, and it gave and it gave and it gave. And for someone who had the deep wounds of scarcity and hunger, this was a miracle for him. And he used to say very early on, he said to me, we all have to do seva. Seva is the Sikh ideology of community service. And he said the easiest way to do community service is simply by feeding people. And the second thing he would always say is that we look for miracles, and yet here is a miracle. And he'd, you know, pick up an onion or a courgette and he'd say, look at this. This has withstood pests, blight, bad weather, yet it comes to our kitchen. We can cook with it. We can share what we cook. And that is a miracle. And I really started thinking about that a lot during the pandemic. And we did Comfort and Joy, the delivery boxes.
Which was so delicious.
Yeah, I remember
it
you
was, it, honestly, some. Yeah, and Sam still talks about it as his best. It wasn't even a taste. It was more than a taste. It was like the greatest taste in our mouth at a very lonely time. It was so comforting. It was so delicious. It's exciting that a book has been born out of that, right?
Yeah. So I thought I'd write it all down.
It was, honestly, it was, yeah, well, you're going to eat some of it today, Mum.
So any of your recipes, are they old recipes that you used to have?
Some of them. There's definitely, like, in fact, there's a recipe in the book that is like a turnip polenta. And turnips are such an unsexy, plain Jane vegetable, but there are delicious ways of making it. So what we do is we cut them up, put a tiny bit of water with some turmeric, and you just kind of let them cook either in a pressure cooker or you steam them or whatever. And when they've gone really soft, because they've got a lot of water, you mash them up. And then in a separate pan, you just kind of do onions with some spices, some ginger, garlic, chili, and tomatoes, and then really like make a thick paste. And then you pop that into the turnips, mash it through, and then you start adding handfuls of polenta. So it becomes this wonderful kind of beautiful, and turnips are so sweet as well. And you put in a tiny bit of sugar just to encourage that kind of, because they've got bitter, but then they've got sweet. You encourage that out. And that recipe is what my mother's mother used to make. And my mother's mother died when my mother was 2. She's never even seen a photograph of her. So that recipe is like touching live flesh. It's like a part of her, which is pretty incredible.
You tell stories so beautifully. And I'd love you to paint more pictures around that family table. You know, what is a memorable dish from your childhood? Was there one dish that either, I don't know, your grandma, your grandfather, your mum was making that... Or your dad?
Never my dad.
Okay, fine.
But I think one of the things that really takes me back to a very happy, wholesome time in my life was ice cream. So it was my Sunday treat with my grandfather, who is diabetic and not supposed to be eating sugar at all. And he would pull up in his kind of VW Beetle, and it was bright green, like lilt green, like, you know, really like parrot green with a soft top. And we would drive into the city, Nairobi, and there was a place called Snow Cream. And it was this amazing temple to 50s Americana kitsch. And it was like you had a counter with like stools that you could spin around and around on until an adult told you off and made you stop. Mm. And the ice cream there was just like sundaes. And I always had the same thing because I'm a creature of habit. I'm like always scared if I don't order what I like. Like I might not like what
You'll
comes.
You get food envy from it. Yeah, okay, got
so
it.
So I always used to have a chocolate dip cone, and my grandfather always had like a banana split or something. But I would eyeball everybody else's, and they were, you know, things that looked like they had shaving foam on them, or like, you know.
So it was vanilla ice cream in a cone.
In a cone.
And then they dipped it in chocolate.
And it got hard.
Crispy on the outside. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Amazing. And you know what? In 2019, I went back there with my husband. I was like, I have to go to Snow Cream. And the place is there. It's exactly the same. Nothing has changed.
Jessie, this is why we need to go to Kenya.
You do. Yeah. There's so many good things in Kenya. Go.
Did it taste exactly how it tasted when you were younger?
Not at all. It was disappointing because, like, you know.
Yeah.
But also, it was the same, but it was looking older and wearier. A bit, I suppose, like I am now. It's like, yeah, time has moved on. But it was wonderful to be there, you know. But my heart ached for my grandfather, you know, because it was, again, it was that thing. He'd come. Ice cream was such a luxury for him because he'd come from so little. So he really saw the joy in life, you know, and sharing food. And like, you know, part of what he did with growing in his allotment or shamba was about donating. So there was a Mama Gina orphanage. He would give to the orphanage. He would give to medical eye camps. He would share everything. He's just such a good man.
Are you Sikh?
I'm Sikh, yeah.
So that there's a huge element of food in Sikh religion. So when you go, I understand it, when you go to the temple, I'm not sure what you call them.
Gurdwara.
That they serve food. That's what they do all day. It's free. And you just go into the temple and you can eat all day.
It's incredible. It's all volunteers, but they seem to know exactly what they're doing. Yeah. So I could just go and cook, and I have done. But, like, it's a wonderful thing because sometimes you see, like, you know, Polish builders or, like, people who have very little. Like, it's treated as well like a food bank. So for people who can't afford. And there is no expectation, and it's served beautifully. It's all vegetarian, delicious, cooked mainly by women, you know, so very maternal cooking. And it's blessed.
And people eating during the service.
Yeah.
They just sit.
You can
just,
like, perfect. My kind of temple, I tell you.
It's just perfect, really. Which is your temple?
So I now used to go to the one in Kingsbury, and I'm not a regular, like, I'm spiritual. I wouldn't define myself necessarily as, you know, Orthodox Sikh. Yeah. I'm very spiritual. I'm very happy. I'm a church bother. I love churches. I go anywhere where I feel, you know, spiritual vibes. Mm. But I used to go to the one in Kingsbury, and then now I've moved into Surrey, so Southall isn't far, and there's some really big Gurdwaras in Southall. But I'm completely amazed at what the Sikh community do, particularly during lockdown, the amount of meals that the Gurdwaras cooked and, you know, sent out to people. The volunteer effort was massive. And even now, like, there's a charity, and they're a Sikh charity, and a bit like Medicine Sans Frontier, wherever there's trouble, they're there, you know, whether it was Syria, they just go and set up kitchens. It's just wonderful. And they make it happen like that.
What was it like being an immigrant family in Kenya? Like, was there ever any tension? Was it difficult? Did you find your community?
I mean, now looking back at it, there was such divides, you know, like, you didn't mix. Like, you know, the Indians stuck to the Indians, the black people.
How did they all end up there? Why Kenya, of all places?
I think that there was a lot of, because it was then a British colony, so there was a lot of call for things like railway building, construction.
So they were invited.
So they were invited. Yeah. So they were, like, you know, posters up saying we need work. And the thing that I really admire about my grandfather is he went to this place. My grandmother joined him 7 years later. And she said to me, she was terrified. She had this horrific, you know, ship crossing. And she'd never left her village, let alone, you know, a country.
Mm-hmm. So it was Did she travel alone?
She traveled with my father. So he was, you know, seven by the time my grandfather saw him again. And it was just incredible because they, not only did they find home, they learned how to speak Swahili. They, you know, integrated. My grandfather was very good at that, knowing everybody, you know, people from all walks of life. But I don't think generally the community was like that. It felt very divided. And I remember as a kid being quite lonely because I had three older sisters, but they were much older. They were cool teenagers. Mm. And then I was this, like, five-year-old hanger-on.
Are you the baby of the family?
My brother is. Okay. So they kept on going till they got their boy. So I just remember where my house was. It was this beautiful house that my grandfather built. There was like this wrought iron gate, and I would look through the wrought iron gate and there'd be children on the other side, but I was never allowed to play with them because they weren't from my community. And there were all these racial divides. And I just remember desperately wanting to play with them and just like kind of hanging out at the wrought iron gate, like trying to talk to them. I do remember one incident, though. My mother had fallen asleep with her emery board. She was always embroidering or crocheting or doing so. She never sat idle. And it was afternoon and she'd fallen asleep. And I had heard the chicken pen that we had at the bottom of the yard, there was a cat in there that had given kittens. And I was like, I want a kitten. So I commandeered this little boy, this little daughter, to come and like go with me to get a kitten.
How old were you?
About five.
Okay.
And so we kind of made this journey, you know, no one was watching. The nanny who I had, the maid who looked after us, had like gone away or whatever. And so we went in, and then I just remember walking in, the smell of chickens, not pleasant, but looking at the cat. And before I could even try and grab a kitten, I just heard this little boy screaming. So he'd tried to steal the eggs, and this hen had basically pecked his face.
Oh, no.
And then he literally ran screaming from the pen.
Oh.
Never to make that adventure again.
Did you get a kitten?
No. But my grandfather used to bring kittens for me. Like, he used to be really sweet. Like, he'd be like, look what I've got in his like jacket pocket, and there'd be a little kitten in it. He's so
sweet.
What
was his name?
Karam Singh. And it means righteous deeds. And he lived his life by that. He was by name, as he was in nature. Yeah.
Oh, I love him.
Ravinda, I want to know how you became a TV star.
I don't know.
Look
if I'm
face,
a TV
Mom,
star.
Besides being absolutely gorgeous, oh. Yeah.
I don't know about TV star. I don't do that much TV anymore, but I started out very much on TV. So I have a wonderful friend called Heather Wiley. She is a fashion stylist on one of the magazines I worked on. And she knew how much I loved cooking because I was like the fashion girl's diet disasters because I'd cook at home and cart all this food in all the time. And she called me up and she was quite psychic. She had this like cosmic magical ability. And she said, I've just seen an advert for a show that Gordon Ramsay is doing. And I just have this, they're looking for a new TV, female TV star. And I just have a feeling that if you enter, you're going to win. You've got to enter. And I thought, well, you know what? Why not? And I just I recorded a thing of myself cooking, sent it in. Next thing, 9,000 women entered. It was like crazy. And then the next thing, they'd narrowed it down to 50 women. And I found myself on set for the F word, cooking against all these wonderful women, and Angela Hartnett was on the panel. You know, it was really wonderful. Mm. And I won. And it was this really crazy moment where, in a way, I was in shock, but also I felt like I really believe in manifestation. And I felt like I'd spent so much of my subconscious time thinking about cooking for people that it didn't feel that shocking to me. I'd been writing a cookery book then, you know, for myself, never thinking I'd get it published. And the day the show aired, I started getting calls from agents saying, you might have a career doing this. Being a journalist, I was very skeptical. I saw 8 agents and I was like, no, it's not for me, not for me. And then I went to the last agent and she was the only one who was like, not sure about you. And I was like, God, I really want her. and then I said to her, to be honest, I'm a writer and, you know, I've been writing this thing. And she said, I must introduce you to one of our agents. And I had my scrappy little manuscript with me for my first book. And she introduced me to Felicity Blunt, who's my now agent all these years later.
And that's Stanley Tucci's
wife.
And Emily's sister.
Yes, exactly. And I was Felicity's first client. I was her first book. So, yeah.
Well, now I need to eat, but I also need to know whether Stanley has ever made you an aperitif.
Stanley has not made me an aperitif.
He's always doing it on bloody Instagram, isn't he?
Yeah, he's taken me out for a drink, but I was at their wedding, which was amazing. And just lovely to see two really good people. They really are both incredible human beings come together, and their children and her family. But Stanley has been incredibly supportive. Am I allowed to name drop? He did something really amazing for me recently.
Drop that name now.
So it was my birthday in May and I decided to take the day off, go to a spa and turn my phone off. And then I emerged at about 5:30 and switched my phone off and I had all these messages from...
saying happy birthday.
And from Felicity being like, why aren't you answering your phone? Pick up. I need a table. I need a table for 5 people for tomorrow for Paul McCartney. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. So thankfully, his PA had already called the restaurant and managed to get a table. So I was like, right, next day, I'm obviously have to be in the kitchen and whatever. And, you know, well-known people come in all the time. We kind of let people be and don't go up and bother them and stuff. But, you know, Paul is like, he's a legend, right? And I still was like, I'm just going to cook for him. And how wonderful that I've cooked for him. I'm not going, obviously going to go saunter over to the table and be that person. But Stanley had basically been my hype man. So he'd been like, when you get there, ask to meet Ravinda, ask her to order for you, get her to tell you about the restaurant. So I was in the kitchen and Neil, our general manager, comes down and he's like, Sir Paul has asked to see you. And so anyway, went up and he was just lovely and, you know, really, and they're vegetarian. Mm-hmm. So, and we're so vegetable forward at Jacconi. They really had a wonderful time. And Mary was there and she's recommended lots of people. Fast. She's so nice.
So did you behave better than Lenny when she met Sir Paul
McCartney? I cooked for Paul McCartney.
Did you?
Yeah, you didn't behave like Ravinda. I'm sure you
did. No, I didn't because I'm not as gracious and as beautiful, darling. No. Hang on a minute. I need to ask one more question.
Okay.
Is your husband a Sikh?
He's not. I married out. He's also got East African Indian roots.
Okay.
But he is...
very handsome.
He's very handsome and very lovely.
Were you introduced?
We met because at the time we met, him and his brother had set up a beautiful tea company called Lalani & Co. And they do small gardens around the world, really sustainable, like paying people really fairly, like really beautiful thing. And his brother had seen that I was doing this talk and said, this girl looks interesting, we should try and work with her, because they were doing a lot of tea tasting menus with people. It's before I had the restaurant. And I was at a friend's restaurant giving this talk and Nadine...
Which restaurant was this?
It was the Cinnamon Kitchen.
Oh, okay.
Vivek Singh's restaurant, who I love. And so Nadim sauntered in and it was a press night. So there was a lot of journalists there and he thought, I'm not going to be able to. So he was about to leave when the PR saw him and said, did you meet Ravinda? I have to introduce you. And I was actually seeing someone else at the time, actually having my heart broken by someone who wasn't very nice to me.
Who is he? I have a word as I say to my grandchildren.
Please do. And anyway, Nadim walked in and I had arranged to meet friends who I hadn't seen for about a year. And he just kept talking to me and they kept saying, when's this guy leaving? And I was like, I have no idea.
What was your first impression?
I just thought he was so, like, silken manners. He was such a gentleman. He was in a beautiful suit. He was so kind, attentive, you know, but I just didn't
easy on the eye?
Very easy on the eye.
Always helps.
Wears a good suit as well. Always looks smart.
Yeah, he always looks smart. And lovely old-fashioned manners. Like, he stood when I stood. And, like, you know, things like that.
Clever guy. And old-fashioned manners.
And then, when he finally did leave, my friend Sophie's husband, Raja, turned to me and said, you're going to end up married to that guy. So now, every year on our anniversary, he sends me a message saying, I told you. So, yeah.
I would like to eat Ravinda's food now.
Okay, because I'll cook the scallops once we've had the starter.
Yeah, should we? How do you want to do it? Should we eat?
Should we
like,
have the bread and the dips and the pickles? It. Should I grab them? I hope you guys are hungry.
Yes. I wanted to know how easy this bread.
Yeah.
Explain to the listeners. It's the saffron.
Yeah, shirmal.
And how easy for people that aren't like you know seasoned bread makers? Is it quite an easy loaf to do?
This is so easy.
Okay,
this
that's what I like to hear.
Probably one of the easiest breads you can make, and for what you get out of it in that brioche like cakey texture. You wouldn't believe how easy it is. It's literally not even, you know, like some bread recipes call for a sourdough starter or they call for letting your yeast ferment and everything goes in together.
Oh, perfect.
And then it gets kneaded up and rolled out by hand, not even a rolling pin. You just shape it by hand and then you leave it to proof for half an hour and you bake it. It's easy.
Okay, that's my kind of bread.
Yeah.
Should we just
cut some up? Honors, okay. Please. If you cut it like through those, so you can get like cake-like slices. So this almost like a cake.
Okay.
And then you get that full, like the full depth of it.
And then it's black sesame seeds and white sesame seeds on top, right?
Yeah.
Mmm, delicious.
Do you like it?
Mmm.
Please be my guest, Lenny. Right. There's such a glut of courgettes at the moment, so this is like the perfect dip for them.
I want to... Oh my God, that's delicious.
Thank you.
I want to talk about your sustainability and how kind of environmentally conscious your restaurant is. You got awarded...
We're carbon neutral.
You're carbon neutral. How many years ago was that that you got...
So that was 2 years, and we're the first independent restaurant to be carbon neutral, basically. It was just really important to both of us because, especially coming from somewhere like Kenya where, you know, you grow up around rural communities who don't even have fridges, like they have the lowest carbon output. And yet they're the ones who are paying for our greedy consumption with climate change. Mm-hmm. And so it was always part of what we wanted to do. And for us, we see the business as this ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And we think that if you have a good restaurant in an area, mm-hmm. you hope that that good spreads. So every single line of our P&L, we look at how can we be doing something good. So where are we buying our produce mm-hmm. from? How can we empower small producers who are looking after our land, hence our relationship with the farm, Waltham Place? How can we empower our team? How can we empower, you know, give hospitality to our guests that's exceptional? How can we contribute to our neighborhood? That's what it's about for us.
Oh my God, that peach, Mum, have you tried the peach yet?
No.
Try the peach.
Here.
And thank... No, she's got it on her plate.
She's got it.
I just need you... Oh, my God. It's with the caramelised peanuts on top. Oh, my goodness. Mm. That is so good.
And that recipe, by the way, is 15 minutes start to finish.
Really?
In the book.
Are these in the book?
Yeah, they're all in the book.
How good is that? Delicious.
The courgette is just amazing.
It's a bit like a baba ganoush, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly.
But with courgette.
I call it mama ganoush. But it's perfect right now because there are so many courgettes. If you grow courgettes, you'll know that you just get so many. So it's a perfect thing to do with them.
Like heaven.
No. Oh.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I wanted to know, you adore food, you talk about it so beautifully, you cook it so amazingly. Where are some of the restaurants in London? When you were in Marylebone, like, I don't presume you get to eat out that much, but where are some of your favourite London, or you live in Surrey now?
Yeah.
Some of your favourite spots?
So I think the place I go to again and again is Maison Francois. I really love it.
I've never been.
Oh, you would love it, Jessie. It's kind of near Fortnum and Mason, so it's St. James's. It's quite extraordinary. It's really elegant. It's really chic. Just everything. The food tastes so good. The service, the hospitality is like excellent. And it always feels like a really good night out.
Great. And what would be your order there? Because you're a creature of habit.
Yeah. Oh, God. I always go for, they do flatbreads, which are wonderful. So they have different flatbreads all the time. So I go for those. And then they have a pasta with like a sausage. I can't remember what kind of sausage it is. Mortadella or something like this. I can't remember. But it's a really good, really like lovely pasta, really well cooked. They do wonderful salads. I mean, their menu changes as well.
Okay.
Wonderful side dishes and things. What else? Oh, gougères. They do amazing gougères that melt in your mouth.
I went
recently and they were like, we're out of the gougères. I nearly cried.
How could they be out of? Because everyone's ordered them.
Yeah, exactly. They do truffle chips with so much truffle on them. It's like a forest of truffle, like real generosity.
Yeah, we like that. So, okay, that Maison Francois, I'm going there and booking. That sounds amazing. I feel like a bit of a kind of a philistine for not knowing about it. Where else do you love?
Okay, so off the beaten track.
Yeah.
There's a place on Ealing Road in Wembley.
Yeah.
That's one of my favourite places to go. I've taken so many chefs there and they absolutely lose their shit about it. It's so good. It's called Ashes Africana.
Okay.
And it's run by a Gujarati family who are also East African Indian.
Right.
So it's Indian vegetarian food. But the magic is it's all cooked by elderly ladies. And you look in their kitchen and they're all these like grandmothers cooking. The service is really slow, but it doesn't matter because the food is so fresh and so good. They do these things called kachoris, which are like a samosa, but like pastry, but filled with lentils that blow my mind. They're so well made. The pastry is so flaky and delicious. And it's a community service because the owner's son said to me recently, you know, we open 365 days a year. Wow. I said, even Christmas Day? He said, yeah, because, you know, we're cooking for a lot of elderly men who are like in this area, who are widowers, and they need to eat. And they come here and it's so cheap. You can like go in and eat for like £15 like a king.
And this is on the Ealing Road?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, it's lovely. It's not been caramelised, but they, you know, I'm sure it will lovely. Taste great.
What's the, is it pea puree?
It's just pea.
With beautiful.
With cumin.
Oh,
with
cumin. Lovely. That looks great.
I'm going to have some more of this bread.
What
this
a
bread
treat.
Is
delicious.
Oh, Ravinda, we haven't even asked. I'm absolutely loving having you on. I'm so thrilled for people to hear your stories and for Mum to taste your amazing food. Last Supper. Shall we begin?
I think I'm going to shock you by saying like my starter. Firstly, actually, I do love like mezier things. I like lots of bits to pick on. Dips, bread, salad-y things, you know, all of that. But actually, most days I'd be really content just to eat crisps and not eat dinner. I love crisps.
Me too.
I can't have them in the house, Lenny. They call out to me. Like, I will eat the whole lot.
I absolutely agree with you. And actually, if you buy a small bag of crisps,
it's never enough. Two mouthfuls.
Yeah.
But why would... And then you look at how many calories are on the side of the small pack. And what I need is half a pack of the big pack.
Mm-hmm.
Which is your favourite flavour?
Salt and vinegar.
Yes.
Oh,
now, which
no.
salt and vinegar place do you go for? Like, what is your choice?
Salt and vinegar. So recently, I was in Suffolk for Latitude, and there is a local, I think it's called something, Farm Field or something.
Okay.
They are literally the best salt and vinegar crisps I've ever eaten because they taste exactly like, you know when you get the right amount of vinegar on good chips?
Yeah.
That's what they taste like.
Okay.
They are amazing.
Can I offer, and I've offered it in the podcast before, and I'm going to do it again, Yorkshire crisps.
Yes, I love.
And when they come in the bloody, what's it called, a tub.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether it's the tub that's doing it, and like they're laced with all the vinegar.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you think these Suffolk crisps are better?
Yes, I do, actually.
Okay, I'm in.
I like crisps abroad.
Lay's.
Yeah, I love Lay's.
I just love crisps. Any
I like
crisps.
Oregano crisps. You know, the ones you get in Greece.
I like the ones that are fried in olive oil.
Yes.
You know those ones, and you get them in a big bag, like half the size of your body.
And family pack.
Yeah.
I mean, that's about just the right amount for me.
That is amazing. So you're kind of like a toddler when it comes to your Last Supper, which is quite unusual, and I didn't think this has been a curveball. Okay, so
bag of crisps.
Okay, if you weren't going to get your bag of crisps for your last supper, they're in there. What is the main?
The main, I think, I'm really simple, and I love my mother's cooking. Mm. Like, it's, you know, for me, she was just the most incredible cook, and I think part of the reason for Jikoni is that I feel like all these women who joined this domestic cult and cooked and cleaned, they never got any thanks. And yet they were so talented. All the women I grew up with, they just had a knack for cooking for 50 without breaking a sweat, you know. And they never got to do what I'm doing, the platform that I've got. all these like very ordinary women with extraordinary stories, and their food was always like, you could tell it was the flavor of their hand. You know, this person made amazing kebabs, this person made amazing dal. And my mother was just good at all of it. She really was. And so something really simple like a rice, a really good dal, she makes excellent dal, homemade achar, which is pickle, with lots of ghee, that is like my happy place.
I wanted to know, was your mum encouraging of you learning?
No, she was terrifying. She's exactly what I've become, gnashing tongs and teeth. She was so fierce in the kitchen. There was never any kind of love or instruction. It was just like, do it again, do it again, do it again until it's perfect. And even now, you know, years later, I think I'd still be terrified to cook. I think even now she finds it, and there's a story in the book about her and about her abdication, because she's now in her 80s. And I think even now, she's never told me, even now I have the restaurant, oh, this is really delicious. She can't quite bring herself to, because her whole identity as a human being, she was married at 16, had her first child at 17. She had no education. Her whole identity is based on being a homemaker. And it's all she's had. And so for her to feel that she has to abdicate that somehow must be really, really hard. And I have a lot of empathy for that. But I would love her to say, this is delicious. Well,
Jessie never says that to me either.
Jessie
always does. She always says, it's very nice. But if I were you, I would have added such and such.
And you know what you should say
back?
It's
very
nice. Yes, chef.
Yes, chef. But she always has got something she would have added and done differently.
It's a collaborative, you know, experience.
Darling, it's not collaborative when I do the cooking, actually.
Tisha.
There's the thing.
Okay, so we had crisps. We've had your mother's dal.
Dal, yeah.
Pickles and ghee and rice. Where are we going to go on this pudding?
So can I have three?
Yes.
Well, one we've already talked about, which is this, you know, moment in time with the chocolate dip ice cream with my grandfather sat by my side. I would love to do that again. The second is tiramisu. It's my favorite pudding. And there is one particular place in Italy, in Cortona, called Trattoria d'Arno. And I've been there many times. And when I first went to that area on a holiday, I went to that restaurant four times. There, tiramisu is exactly what it should be. It's like a slop on the plate. It has no shape or form. They like spoon it out of the bowl and it just collapses in on itself.
Jessie does it like that.
Oh, yeah, it's so good.
Mine was an accident, I think. This sounds great.
But anyway, by the third time I'd been to the restaurant, he was like, and I just was like crazy about the tiramisu, he kind of got it. So every time I go now, he just brings out the whole bowl, puts it on the table, and he's like, knock yourself out. And I always have more than one helping. And then the third is this like really lovely moment. And this is really kind of a love letter to the people who help us as immigrants find home. And when I came to this country, my first initial impression was horror because it was so cold. I come from this like really tropical backdrop, and then it was a grey November in this like flat with no heating, no washing machine. It was hard. And I really tried to understand the traditions and the, you know, of this new nation. And I went to this school that had all these like odd traditions like Morris dancing, and it was all very weird. And then there was this one tradition which I finally got, and it was harvest. And what they used to do is you had to bring a cardboard box in, decorate it with crepe paper, and then it would be filled with tins of this and that and biscuits. And then they would assign you an elderly person in your neighborhood to go and give it to. And for someone who'd always grown up in an extended family with my grandparents, I could not understand why in this country, like, they say it takes a village to bring up a child, but I also understood that it takes a village to shepherd people through their golden years. And so this tradition really appealed to me. And I remember going to this house, knocking on the door, and this woman with a very pink face opened the door, and she was like, oh, I heard you bought me some treasure. And her name was Mrs. Locke. And she lived just down the street from me. And I just didn't understand boundaries at that age. So I was literally in her house every other day. I would basically pinch things that my mother had bought that I thought she needed more.
You were doing harvest all year round.
Yeah, literally. And then I'd turn up with, you know, shortbread biscuits or, you know, whatever it was. And she got me into the Archers. She introduced me to, she used to send me to the library to go and buy, get her like large print Danielle Steele or Barbara Bradford Taylor. And she told me the story of her life. And she used to give me these really wet, sloppy kisses. And she had a really bristly chin, which I kind of loved. And another friend of mine, Sarit from Honey & Co. was like, that sounds like my idea of hell. Like, I loved her. So she introduced me to the thing that she swore kept her alive. She ate donuts. I'd never had a donut until that. They were raspberry donuts and Fry's Turkish Delight, which she said.
Oh, that is so delicious.
So, and together, and I actually then, years later as a chef, invented a donut in her honor, and it's a Turkish Delight chocolate donut. And yeah, that was Mrs. Locke.
Mrs. Grace Locke.
Yeah, she was amazing.
Oh, that is such a great story.
Do you want to get dessert going?
Yeah, I definitely do.
Shall I serve up?
Serve up, yes, please. Now, this is like my heaven because it has condensed milk in it, doesn't it?
It does have condensed milk.
And cream.
It's like a tres leches cake.
Oh, thank you.
But with falooda, which is this incredible bobby pig. Can you see?
Oh, and very, very on trend, yes.
Right?
Thank you.
So you can see it's kind of mottled. So you get some bits of the cake that are still like brown and spongy and then some that are dyed Barbie pink. And the whole thing with this is falooda is this incredible syrup, a bit like a rose cordial.
Right.
But it's got other like herbs and things in it as well. And it's like, Rue Afza, which is what it is called, translates to soul refresher. And you have it in milk, like a milkshake, and it's exactly
so
that.
So it's like the medicinal Nesquik.
Yeah,
okay,
kind of,
right,
exactly.
Fine.
And it's a really fond, nostalgic childhood memory for me. So
where can you find it?
In all
Any
kind
Asian
of
supermarkets,
Indian supermarkets. I mean, we get ours on Amazon and, you know.
And this has basil seeds in it.
Basil seeds. So in
where
a traditional,
do you find them?
Traditional falooda would always have basil seeds in it, but these I often use just chia seeds. It's just something that gives that kind of texture.
This is my heaven cake. This is like the Portuguese cake you used to get me for my birthday, Mum.
Really?
Oh my God.
It's wet.
Oh my God, I'm in heaven. This would be like my last supper.
Really?
I love it so much.
I'm so happy.
Delicious.
Because I really was thinking, what should I make? And then I just felt this was a crowd pleaser. But look, you can bake it in these like disposable tins. Take it to a barbecue. Everyone's going to be your best friend.
And is this an easy one? Apart from getting the ingredients and once you got them.
So I made the sponge last night, which is again, you basically whiz up in your electric mixer, you whiz up your eggs and your sugar until they're really nice and thick. And then you just add flour and you add rose water, a little tiny bit of salt, and then that's, and some baking powder. You bake it, you mix together condensed milk, double cream and milk and the rose syrup. And you basically pour it over when it's hot. Put some, you know, skewer holes in, pour it over, leave it in the fridge overnight, whipped cream, basil seeds or chia seeds or chia seeds, I don't never know how you say them, strawberries, pistachios and rose petals. And that's it, done.
I'm really happy.
Your kids, you know what, I kind of made it because I thought your kids would appreciate
it. My kids will appreciate it, thank you. Oh my God.
It's actually divine.
Divine. Aww. She's goddess-like,
I'm
isn't
coming
she?
Again. Can I come again next
week?
Yeah,
come again. I also feel like you should be on MasterChef being a judge. That's what I need. I feel like you should be doing more
or
television.
The Great British Menu.
I know you're very busy doing Fighting the Good Fight, also running a really successful restaurant, making cookbooks. Yeah, you know, you're doing all of it.
Spare time,
I just do eating crisps. But I do think that more people need to hear and see you. And I know they can enjoy your food every night, but like it's would you like to do more of that? Or
I think if it's the right TV.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if it's giving a message, telling stories. I'm really interested in telling stories, particularly women's stories, because I think, like I was saying, ordinary women have extraordinary stories. You've just got to ask the question. Mm. And then these incredible stories tumble out. And I love hearing those stories. And I think food is a great connector. You know, and when you have someone over a plate of something, they will tell you their life story. And it's a wonderful thing, as you guys have done well. But that's kind of what I want to do. I want to be able to tell the stories of immigration, different immigrants coming in. Because I think that's, people often ask at Jikoni, how would you, you know, describe your food? It's not Indian. So how do you sum it up? And we say we cook the food of immigrants because it's for those people who have the ache for what they've left behind, but then the wonder of their new landscape and what happens when you reconcile those two things. And for me, it was like, you've come to this country, you're really precious about holding on to, you know, everyone, immigrants particularly, they say you lose all your traditions, the way you dress, your language, all of that. The food never goes. And you know that with Jewish food, right? Look at what Claudia Roden has done. Mm-hmm. All those women who've held on to those recipes, it's integral to us being human beings.
We should give this message to Suella Braverman, that how much immigrants contribute.
I'd just like to shake
her. We're sitting around this table. Yeah. Do you think we've done all right? Have we drained society?
I mean, you know, I think what makes Britain great is the immigrants, actually. Mm. You know, like, look at their stories, their resilience, what they've brought to the country, the power behind, you know, all the businesses that they've set up, the local economies that they've set up. All of that. And yeah, for me, when I came here, it was very much like, okay, I want to preserve my identity and where I've come from. But here is also this amazing nation, which actually seemed so barren when I first got here. But now as I'm settling in, there are all these influences.
I'm settling in. How many years have you been here?
No, I mean when I was a child, you know, when I started settling in. And I felt that, I mean, I grew up in a very densely immigrant area. And so all of those influences fed into my food. And I think you can taste that. Like, yeah. The food is from everywhere. Yeah. And we celebrate all the similarities we have, but also the richness of our differences. It's a great thing.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for sharing all your stories.
Just
people
fabulous.
People need to go to Jikoni. People need to go and buy the new book. This is your third book, isn't it?
This is my third book, yeah.
Well, if all the things we've eaten today are in that book.
It is such a pleasure to spend time with you.
Thank you so much.
I guess you did still serve me food. I still managed to get that out of you, even though we spent more time together.
She's the busiest woman, I think, in London.
You know, Jay Rayner once said to me, you're like a Jewish woman trapped in an Indian body. And I was like, no, I'm Punjabi, because we are feeders just like you.
Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Such an honour to listen to your stories and eat your beautiful food. Ravinder Bogle, what a fascinating, inspiring, generous, beautiful person.
Just a wonderful.
She kind of sprinkles this kind of energy over everyone with her food,
notice,
with the way
Jessie,
she speaks.
When she talks, she smiles nearly all the time. And now I've decided I need to smile more. I don't think I smile enough. Beautiful teeth. She smiled.
But she just
and
so
considered my veneers in the whole of this.
Oh my God.
She'd made soft bread because she knew about my veneers from listening to the podcast. She wanted to challenge my veneers.
Thoughtful, brilliant, wonderful Ravinder. I'm so glad that you got to meet her. And I'm so glad that you got to taste her food.
She's multifaceted. You know, she's not just a cook. She's a storyteller. She's got a fantastic heritage. She just is wonderful at relationships and understanding and empathetic. All the fabulous things that you want in a friend, actually.
Yeah. Well, she's just said, please come to the restaurant. So maybe you could have a friend in Ravinder.
I'd love to.
Comfort and Joy, Ravinder Bogle's third book is out now. I can attest that the food is divine.
Well, that falooda cake, as Tully calls it, a strawberry flood cake.
The strawberry flood cake falooda.
That was another level. Barbie pink.
Oh, just
the most delicious tasting.
That's the thing.
I never even knew Basil had seeds.
It's so fun and creative. I'm going to try that cake because that is my idea of heaven.
Can you just reassure me? I know that the scallops were not caramelised.
They were nice though.
But they were delicious. They were sweet and they were overcooked, were they?
They certainly weren't. They were really nice.
Yeah.
in light of Ravinda coming on and telling us stories about her childhood, her family, I would really love to hear from some of you. Maybe you've got a grandparent's favourite recipe. We would love to hear it. We'll read some out this series. It's hello@tablemannerspodcast.com and add a story in there too. I'd love to hear it. It's just so, it's always so fascinating. What a guest for the podcast. We have a lovely time, don't we, Mum? Thank you for listening. Thank you to Ravinda. Comfort and Joy is out now. And we will see you next week. Take care.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.